Welcome back. Your dreams were your ticket out. Welcome back to that same old place that you laughed about. Well, the names have all changed since you hung around, but those dreams have remained and they've turned around.
Recorded live from Pennsylvania and Nebraska, U.S. of A. It's the Bob and Elvis Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Elvis Dingledean.
Can I ever tell you, when I was young, I always felt I was adopted?
No. Really?
My parents never said anything, so one day I decided to just go up and ask.
Good for you.
The day I graduated from Buchanan, went right up to my father, had my diploma in my hand, looked him straight in the eye, I said, Ling Chow. He said, was I adopted? He said, no, you're not adopted. You rented.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bob and Elvis Show.
You know, when you listen back to some of that stuff from the 1970s, boy, was it racist.
It was, but coming from Cotter, it was, you know, from this guy with this massive jufro, it was okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was funny because I was looking for an appropriate song to play. So I thought, well, Welcome Back Cotter's good for, yeah, basically a return back to form for everything, for blogging and doing the show. And of course, you were away for an entire show.
Yeah.
And then as I was finding that song, I found that joke as one of the other suggested items on YouTube. You know, because Gabe Kaplan used to always do one of those zingers at the end of an episode of Welcome Back, Cotter. Yeah. And this one was this one made me laugh because it was so un-PC. I mean, he even does like the Ching Chow Chong voice, you know, in there, which is great.
The great thing about that gag is it would have just the Ling Chow part would have been enough, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
He didn't have to go into the race into the little racist Chinese guy, but yeah. just the little Ling Chow would have been enough.
Yeah,
so
Ling
I said,
Chow.
Ling Chow. Pow!
Right. But he had to go. I mean, that was Gabe Kaplan living on the edge, right? I mean, he was a shock jock. He was a
Did he die?
What's that? Is he dead? Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. You know what? I think he is.
Yeah, I think he did.
I think Gabe Kaplan's dead.
But you know, I was thinking that hearing that song, I really—that's one of the shows that has been off my rerun radar forever. So I really haven't heard that theme for 30 years. I mean, it really took me back. And I was thinking the other day how we've moved out, grace, thankfully, of the world where the theme song to the show or to the movie has to have the name of it in the theme song. That was like such a 70s and 80s thing.
Yeah.
I think the last movie I can think that did it or that even tried to do it was Groundhog Day. And that's what got me thinking about it, because that opening title song is so lame ass.
Yeah.
The I'll Be Your Weatherman. It's, you know,
right.
They had to shoehorn a song about being a weatherman into this thing.
Yeah.
It's like the last movie I can think that did that. But back in the old, you know, especially in the 70s and 80s, every show had to have, you know, the name of it or the theme song had to have something to do. And it was lame.
Well,
awful.
That's what Sherwood Schwartz did. I mean, he turned every show. I mean, they explained every show in the theme song.
Yeah,
like you think
different
of like
different
Island.
Strokes.
Yeah,
you know, hey, here's a white guy, and he bought him some black kids, and they got different strokes to rule the world.
Here we are, face to face,
a couple of silver spoons.
Right, hoping to find.
I love that opening though, because it had the. They ran the clip of the dad doing the little dance when Pac-Man came, which I always thought.
Yeah, I had no recollection of that whatsoever
until
you just said that.
Yeah,
right.
I love that guy.
And then the little train they had.
Why have such affinity, such affection for that guy? Wasn't he in something else before Silver?
Yeah, you know what? He was in a show after that called, and I watched this show because I thought it was great. It was called Best of the West. You remember that? He played James
Absolutely,
Best.
Absolutely, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
was like a cheesy, like, laugh track, Western sitcom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then the kid from Voyagers was in that.
Yeah,
who's that kid
oh my
from
God.
Voyagers?
Another Jufro kid.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
What was he doing in the West? That kid.
Yeah, that kid. And then who was the guy from Newhart? Larry Darrell and Darrell was in that. The guy who played Larry.
Chris Anderson? That or yeah, whatever. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he was on Deadwood. Right. It was. Yeah. Yeah.
That guy can't
Richard
act.
Sanders. Yeah. What?
Not act.
What was his name? God, what's that actor's name?
His last name was Sanderson.
Yeah.
I think it was. And he was in Blade Runner. He was.
But he was awesome in Deadwood. He was one of the best things about, and I love Deadwood. I love everything about Deadwood. But he was one of the best things as the mayor of Deadwood.
Yeah. And the hotel clerk.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And he was in that show.
I love that show, Voyagers, that with the Omni, and the guy that was in that. Then he went
Bog.
On to that other show, and then he got killed on set. He got shot or something. Shot himself in the face. That guy.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, that's right. He was. Right.
Remember, he was fucking around with a gun with blanks in it and killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was that guy.
Yeah, it was Bog. His character's name was Bog, I think.
My God.
Phineas Bog.
Yeah, Phineas Bog. That's right. That was an awesome show. They had this little gizmo called an Omni with a little globe in it. I wanted one of those so bad, man. I wanted to be a boy.
Yeah, here's the theme song. I just now found it.
And it was the worst special effects on Earth.
Yeah, it was. I just saw that chroma key, the two of them flying through space.
Oh, it was the worst chroma key. I could do that on my computer right now and make it look
better. Oh, there's Bog fighting gladiators.
Time to help history along. Yeah. Give it a push where it's needed.
Right, and he had one of these kind of voices. It was really neat.
Yeah, see, he's a good-looking guy.
John Eric Hexum.
Yeah, that's a very unlikely name.
Yeah, right.
Hexum. I've never seen a name like that ever.
And
but
me,
he was awesome. And man, I had one of those childhoods where I had to be somebody else because I hated being me so much.
Right.
So I went through these. Oh my, wait, my alarm clock is saying it's time to get up. Wait, listen. Plays the Entertainer.
That's so smart, Entertainer.
It's time to wake up.
Get your toes a tapping in the morning.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and work is. Oh, I'm actually supposed to be working today, so
that's
a joke.
Yeah. Well,
So I would be like Indiana Jones or James Bond or the guy from Voyagers or just anything other than me. Obviously, my name Elvis Dingledy. Obviously,
that trend continues. Yes, of course.
Anything other than myself, please.
Mm-hmm.
I had a stocky Indian friend at school.
Stocky Indian
whose name was
friend.
He was stocky, but he was powerful. His name was Dipu, D-I-P-U, and he was. I hung around him because he was bigger than fatter than me. But he was so powerful. And here's the funny thing about Dipu. He loved to humiliate me. So he and I, he was like the only kid in school that watched Voyagers besides me. So we would hang out and pretend that we were Voyagers. But at I would hang out with him at PE because he would be the kid that made me look not so fat and lazy, right? So when we were so I figured, okay, this guy's humongous, right? He's like just Samoan big, right?
Yeah, right.
But he was Indian, capital Indian, not Native American. And
they're not usually very large.
No. They're usually very thin and drunk. And with no
I don't know about the drunk, but okay.
Well, around here they are.
Okay. In Nebraska?
The only remaining Indian tribe in Nebraska lives about a mile from here. So believe me, I know.
Oh, I thought you meant Indian from India.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. These, right. I don't know what he was. He was Americanized. He had been on the refined sugars and the high fructose, I guess, because he was massive. Right. And so I was like, oh, great. If I hang out with him, I won't look so fat and sluggish, right? So he'll be about my speed in PE. So with the push-ups and the sit-ups. And so one day we're out there, and this is in Tampa, Florida, by the way. It's excruciatingly hot. Out in the PE area, and we have this big. We're on the track for the track and field track, and we have to run like 700 laps. And I'm like, okay, Dipu, it'd be all right. So he'll keep up with me, or I'll keep up with him. So we're going along, and I'm like, the heart attack. And he goes, he says, you know what? I'm like, what? He goes, I gotta tell you something. And I'm like, what? And he goes, I gotta. I got to go turbo boost. I said, what does that mean? He goes, you're running too slow. You're making me look bad. I'm like, oh no, what is this about? And he goes, I got to do turbo boost. I'm like, what are you? And so he goes, he actually says out loud, turbo boost. And he took off. I mean, he put the fucking leather down, just zoom. And it's like a cartoon. I'm standing there in this pile, in this cloud of dust, and
oh my
he
God.
Just takes off. And the motherfucker was the fastest thing I've ever seen in my life, this giant Indian kid, and made me look like an idiot. Like, and so wow. Now I'm like the last one. So now, like, the first lap is catching up to me, and I'm only, you know, that they're doing their second, and I'm like, and he's saying turbo boost as he's flying away from me, making me look fat and slow and sluggish.
No, my
that
God.
That was Deepu.
Well, here we go. John Eric Hexum,
yes,
was killed or killed himself on the set of the show Cover Up.
Cover Up,
Cover Up.
Model. It was like a model. It was a modeling agency, but they also did detective work.
Hexum was apparently unaware. This is from Wikipedia. Hexum was apparently unaware that blanks used paper or plastic wadding to seal gunpowder into the shell, and that this wadding was propelled from the barrel of a gun with enough force to cause severe injury or death if the weapon is fired within a few inches of the body, especially if it pointed at a particularly vulnerable spot, such as the temple or the eye. Although
he put
the
right to his temple, didn't he?
Discharge did not penetrate his skull. The wad struck him in the temple with enough blunt force trauma to shatter a quarter-sized piece of his skull and propel the piece into his brain, causing a massive hemorrhage.
Oh, my God. So that's awful.
And that's how Hexum was killed. And Gabe Kaplan is still alive.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And it now credits him on Wikipedia as being an American comedian, actor, poker commentator, and professional poker player.
That's right. I guess I knew that. I've seen him on those Poker After Dark shows.
Right and he's still
some
hanging on to
mustachioed Hasidic that I can't remember who does.
Yeah, and he's still hanging on to the facial hair.
Trademark. I've seen him without it, and it's better that he has it.
Yeah, I guess he's just clinging to that welcome back Cotter look. I mean, he's just desperate. But I mean, I think if he's made a career for himself as a poker commentator, then, you know, more power to him.
Yeah, and commenting on poker is strenuous work.
Right.
Oh, look, it's a six. Ooh, that didn't help.
And, you know, clearly it's been a slow news couple of weeks because, I mean, here we are. We've spent the last, 15 minutes talking about shows that have long since not been on the air and most of our listeners have never heard of, right? Voyagers with Mino Palouse. That's right. Mm.
Wait, what was that? What was his last name?
Mino Palouse.
How do you spell that last name?
P-E-L-U-C-E, maybe?
Ah, okay.
And his first name was M-E-E-N-O, is what
they... Yeah, Mino, just two completely unlikely names. You know, Hollywood has changed. So I woke up this morning. I always leave a TV on when I'm asleep, when I'm abed, because I just need background noise or I can't fall asleep. My brain just won't let me. So I leave TV on. So it's always a crapshoot what I wake up to in the morning, because whatever I go, you know, there's a cable channel.
Yeah.
Then I wake up to something horrible. The other day I woke up to Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, so that was excellent.
Yeah, of course.
But today I woke up to Superman 2, and I'm thinking, what universe casts Margot Kidder in the 21st century as Superman, as Lois Lane?
Margot Kidder.
Oh my God. Could she just be any more egregious? I just said more power to her. Now, I don't know. She's wandering around in someone's backyard right now, like hiding in the bushes. But it's like, Jesus. I mean, Christopher Reeve was such perfect dead-on casting.
Yeah.
But then to put Margot Kidder opposite, she was like 50, it seemed like.
Yeah, here's my impression of Margot Kidder in Superman.
Come here, Clark. Give us a big kiss.
In Superman 2, she's actually smoking a cigarette. She's got the cigarette hanging out of her mouth.
Right.
Superman 2 is the biggest train wreck. The movie version, they released the Richard Donner, the director's cut. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's awesome.
It is awesome.
Oh, my God. It's such a better movie.
So much better.
Oh, my. It makes sense. Like, the one that they released, it doesn't make any fucking sense. It's just awful.
Mm-hmm.
But it was my favorite movie when I was a kid. I mean, I was absolutely a Superman nerd.
Yeah.
I mean, just a huge Superman nerd.
Well, I mean,
my dad took me to see the original in 1980 at a midnight showing when we lived in Germany. I had to take a nap. I was like 7, and so I had to take a nap. My dad took me to the midnight show at this little theater in Germany, and just blown away by it. Yeah. That was a very special memory.
Yeah, and Christopher Reeve is just such a quintessential Superman. I mean, just the perfect casting for Superman.
But here's the thing. He was a better Clark. He was a better Clark Kent. Genius Clark Kent. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he did that, because he almost made the whole ridiculous thing that you could hide Superman in Clark Kent. He almost made that believable.
Yeah.
That, you know, just by reducing himself, he's a big guy. He was like 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah.
Just a massive guy. But he was so fumbly and bumbly and awkward and sweet and ridiculous as Clark. It was just an amazing performance. He was just a great guy.
Yeah, for that role, he would just, when he was Clark, he would just kind of scrunch himself down make himself seem weighed down and scrawny. Somehow, Clark Kent was scrawny, even though, you know, Reeve at that time, for the role, he was. He was 6'4". He must have weighed 220.
Oh, yeah.
He's just massive. Yeah, well,
he says in Superman 1 that 220, 225, something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, so he was, I mean, he was a monster. And he looked great in I love the new suit in the new movie, even though the new movie sucked. Yeah. The way they did the suit, except for the cape. The cape looked like this S&M fucking dungeon thing.
and you love it.
I do love it.
Fabulous.
I've got one.
Right.
It's on eBay.
Fabulous.
But the old suit, you know, he's kind of, and they messed up the S. The S kind of went, the top of the S kind of went slanty, which I didn't like. But but the director's cut, everybody go out and rent that or Netflix it or something. The director's cut of Superman 2 is phenomenal. And then those movies went right in the fucking toilet.
Yeah, they did. They just got silly. I mean, by the time they get to the one where, I don't know, was it Richard Pryor wanting to launch a nuclear
Superman
bomb
3.
Or something? Superman.
Yeah.
Was it Superman 3 with Richard Pryor already?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
Yeah, that one was just. I mean, they just said, okay, fuck it, let's just go full on comic book retard script and just not take this seriously at all. And then the reboot just took it too seriously. I mean, it was just, there was no humor in it.
Yeah.
At all. It
well,
was
yeah,
just so self aware.
Exactly. Exactly. And I thought, and it's a shame because I thought Ruth was a great Superman.
I did too. Absolutely. Almost. Was channeling Christopher.
It was creepy. Some of the Kent scenes, the Clark Kent scenes were eerie. I mean, they were
eerie. Absolutely. I mean, it could have been Reeves, you know, son easily.
Yeah.
But the script was just lifeless. I mean, it just had no heart.
That's right. And you know,
it was
I mean,
Star Trek, the motion picture, you know, you get everybody together and you shoot it, but there's just no heart in it. You know, they didn't find the heart until Star Trek II.
And that's shocking because they really tried to put heart in there with the sun and, you know, with him sort of eavesdropping on the sun from outside, kind of creepy, him stuck outside the, you know, the bedroom window, just kind of stalking that kid, you know.
Yeah, that whole thing just didn't,
yeah.
And that brings me back to the whole point of two, like, I didn't understand in Superman 2 why he would give up his, I didn't understand why Lois would love a Superman without powers. It's like, you know, she only digs him because he's Superman. You fucking fly.
Yeah.
Do anything he wants. And he goes in the little chamber and he comes out and he's basically just Clark Kent. She didn't love Clark Kent.
Right.
She loved Superman. So I didn't like Superman for doing that. It's like, you're going to give everything, you're going to give it all up for that.
And it wasn't,
there's a better piece of ass out there somewhere.
It wasn't a sex issue either, was it? Because I think they had sex before he renounced his superpowers.
Issue. No.
It was.
No.
It was.
No, yeah,
so they were. So Superman was afraid that he was going to, like, blast the back of her out as soon as he...
Right. He had to get his rocks off. And, his super... Yeah, that would have not...
But, I could swear that they were laying in bed naked with each other, and then he gets up and then goes into the chamber.
No, he says... She goes, why don't I go get more comfortable? And when she comes back in her little deal, not freezing her ass off for some reason in this ice palace.
Yeah.
You know, somehow he's got central heating in there that's not melting the Fortress of Solitude. She comes back and he's talking to his mom on the spectral vision or whatever.
Yeah.
So no, he didn't get the knock her bottom out with his
super sex powers,
super
right?
Seed, yeah.
Yeah, super.
So yeah,
super
it was
sperm.
Just all. He's basically, look, Mom, I'm 40 something years old. I got to get my rock off here.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, you got to get in the anti power chamber. And he's like, fuck. So I didn't buy. And it made me like Superman less. Like, I get the point. I get it from a script perspective. He needs to be powerless against these three assholes, but I mean, it was just a train wreck. That's what happens when the studio gets a hold of the movie and the director can't do what he wants to do. It's
that's
just
right.
This fucking train wreck.
Yeah, and whenever that happens, it's always a worse film.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've been watching. I spent the whole holiday watching the Godfather saga on the Blu-rays, yeah. in the high definitions, and you know, really haven't ever seen it like that. Ever.
Well, if you read the story of those movies, I mean, or at least the first one, I mean, it could have been an absolute train wreck had Coppola not, you know, had the balls to stand up
in
to
there. Yeah. And Bob Evans or Robert Evans too. I mean, Robert Evans made it a better film. Even I don't know if you've ever seen The Kid Stays in the Picture, but that's an amazing movie.
Yes, I have. And I told Coppola, Francis, you make this movie the way you want to make it.
Yeah, it's like, just love his narration.
You want to make it the way you want to make it, baby.
You know. It's just the ultimate Hollywood sleazebag. Yeah. Just, I mean, I just love that story, though. I mean, just this gorgeous, bronzed, you know, Grecian god hanging out at a pool is selling ladies' slacks. And somebody just comes up and goes, you ought to be in pictures. You know, it's just, and then he's suddenly the head of Paramount Pictures. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely a fantastic story. Fantastic in the original meaning.
I said to Coppola, you wop guinea greaseball, you make this goddamn movie the way you want to make it, baby.
That's right.
You take that novel and turn it into something, baby. That's my best Robert Evans impression.
He's just, it's the best narration, the best. I mean, it's just an amazing movie. Go out and, if you have any love of Hollywood and movies, you've got to see. It's called The Kid Stays in the Picture. Great, great movie.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, we were talking about Toy Story 3, right, before the show started. And yeah, I mean, I ended up finally seeing that over the break.
Yeah.
And you know, it struck me, and we were talking about this, that you know, Pixar is pretty much flawless in terms of their record of movies. I mean, every
almost
Pixar animated movie has been great, except for the goddamn Cars movie.
Soon and to be sequelized.
Right. And it's such a mistake. I mean, the problem with that movie is you can't make an animated movie a successful one. I guess it was successful. They're making a sequel.
Oh, it's hugely.
But
yeah,
it's not
going to
be good.
The boys loved it. I guess that's why it was off my radar so badly, because I've got a girl. And she was, you know, she was little, and I wasn't buying it. I just didn't go for it.
Yeah. Well, Larry the Cable Guy was in it, so that was.
Oh yeah, Mater. I don't even understand. Toe Mater? Is that a joke?
Toe Mater.
That's his name? Mater? Toe Mater? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I didn't even know that.
Alone. Just that alone makes me angry enough to not watch it. I mean, the only redeeming thing in it was Paul Newman.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got that fucking, it's got, what's his name as the main character? Everybody hates him. The actor Luke Wilson, Owen Wilson.
Oh, yeah,
I hate him. Yeah. I don't want to see him in anything.
Well, I mean,
Matthew McConaughey is a voice,
right? And that's just secondary. I mean, the main gripe with that movie is it's a movie in which they humanize an accessory. I mean, it's like having talking shoes. You do not make a movie out of something that you wear or sit within.
Right. Exactly. It philosophically made no sense. Like I was saying before the show, I would understand it if it was like post-apocalyptic, like Planet of the Apes, where somehow the humans with fingers, with fine touch, with opposable thumbs, had built a world. And then out of some, you know, an AI or some nuclear accident, suddenly everything was, you know, mechanical, became living. But there's no human element in this. It's just a world run by machines, by airplanes and cars and trucks and buses and motorcycles. That doesn't make any sense. They don't have hands. They cannot build things.
Yes.
And yet there's this world of hotels and and garages and posters.
Yeah.
And it just made no sense. It was cognitively dissonant.
Yeah.
The whole time I'm just going, what? How did they get that? Why is that there? It would just be this chaotic world, right? There was in one of those Red Letter Media, one of those great, and they still haven't done the episode 3. God damn it.
Yeah.
I go there every day. But in one of those reviews of Star Trek I can't remember. Not Insurrection, but the other. Nemesis. The one with the fake Picard. The one with the clone Picard.
Yeah.
He's talking about if the Riemanns built this ship, the bad guys, if they built this massive spaceship, why didn't they make the buttons on the consoles bigger for their big monster hands? It was a great point. And that's what I'm thinking in Cars. How could they have done? Why didn't they make a world that was more amenable to their giant car selves? It looks like a human world with cars in it, but it makes no sense. I hate that movie. Damn you, Pixar.
Absolutely.
So there. Yeah. But the only misstep, and of all the movies, I want a Monsters, Inc. sequel.
Yeah, I mean,
that's one of my favorites.
They can make sequels one after another for all of those movies, and they'll all be fantastic. I mean, and you know, the thing about Toy Story 3, you know what made Toy Story 3 great? And this was what got us talking about it.
Yes.
There was a monkey in it.
Yeah, because I've got my little monkey.
Yeah.
Little monkey symbol.
There was the symbol monkey. And as we all know, you put a monkey in something and it's going to be good.
Instant comedy.
That's right.
Any sort of monkey.
And what a great idea that was to make that symbol monkey, the clapping symbol monkey, be the security guard. That was my favorite sequence of that movie, where they're trying so carefully to sneak past security, and he's starting, and then he just absolutely wigs out. I'm sitting on an airplane, I'm watching this thing on my iPhone, and I'm just laughing out loud. Everyone must have been looking at me, because I'm seeing this monkey freaking out and clapping its symbols and... You know, they're trying to escape through. I mean, just awesome.
But here's the question. Did you weep openly?
I did not. Everyone was saying how sad it was at the end and everything.
I was a disaster. Sitting next to Peanut in a theater watching it with my daughter right there. And I was absolutely sobbing in my, just dissolved. I mean, just completely wrecked by that movie.
Oh. Yeah, see, absolutely. What specifically was it? Is it that they went to a new family, or is that?
Well, I don't know that I've got a
spoiler.
Soul?
By the way,
I mean, if you're not crying at that, especially with a kid recently gone off to college, there's something wrong with you. I don't know. It's just the poignance of it, and the whole timeline of it. I mean, the fact that these movies have grown and matured and happened in real time with Andy. That, you know, Andy started out at the age he did in the first film, and by the time the third one comes around, that the chronology, the timeline is accurate, and he is that grown and off to college. I don't know. It was just something very, and the fact that this is probably it, that I've seen one and two probably many, many more times than you have, because the age of our daughters. Your daughter is 18, mine is 8.
That's right.
So there's a huge difference there in you know, touchy feely emotional aspects of the films, right? Like I'm much more hands on with the. I've seen number two, maybe my favorite movie of all time. I mean, absolutely in my top three, not animated or children's film, just movies.
Yeah.
I mean, number two is a brilliant, brilliant film.
It really is.
I mean, just from top to bottom, it's a flawless film. Except that it didn't make sense that Woody would have been the rarest collectible. If he was the star of his own show, he would have been the most widely produced toy.
That's right. So
that pissed me off, but I nitpick. But yeah, at the end of three, just devastated, sobbing. I mean, I had to sit in the theater for 10 minutes to collect myself.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
amazing.
But
I'm very emotional. I'm emotional anyway, and I get that way about Peanut, and I mean, it's all allegorical.
Right.
You know, just, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I get that way around certain movies. Over the break, I saw True Grit, and I was a sobbing, weeping mess at the end of True Grit.
What?
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. I wasn't.
But
I don't think you're
the weepy type.
I can be. I mean, I'm not completely emotionally reserved and everything. But, yeah, there's certain movies. I'm trying to think what... Well, you know, we talked about this on the show a few weeks ago. It wasn't a movie, but it was the end of... the last sequence of 6 Feet Under. I mean, I was a sobbing, weeping mess. I mean, I was inconsolably sad at the end that episode, that finale.
Yeah, I mean, any given episode of that show make you feel like just fucking cutting your wrist.
Yeah.
That's why I kind of had to abandon it finally. It was just so bleak. But
I think
movies that I can't return to. Like, I've only ever seen One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest once.
Really?
Yeah, I absolutely cannot ever do that again. Mm. It destroyed me.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My dad came home. I was a teenager. I had rented it from Errol's, the local Errol's Video, ding ding, there in Ravenswood Plaza or whatever it was there. And but my dad came home from work and found me between the coffee table and the sofa, rolled up in a ball, fetally, rocking back and forth and sobbing. And he thought somebody had died.
Right.
And I'm like, no, I just point to the TV. One flew over the cuckoo's nest. Yeah. That was 1987. It's the last time I've ever seen that film.
Yeah. I mean, I get a little, I get choked up. The end of Shawshank Redemption. But not out of sadness, but out of,
joy. Green Mile too, when they kill off Coffee and all that happens. Those are just two perfect movies.
Yeah, they really are.
Green Mile, and I wish Darabont would do nothing but Stephen King would do nothing but write books about people in prison, and Darabont would do nothing but direct them and write the screenplays. I mean, that's just the perfect pairing
talent
there. I'm reading Stephen King's new book. I got it for Christmas. Full Dark, No Stars. It's four novellas, and they're just really bleak, really rough. I mean, just really. The first one, funnily enough, is about a guy who lives in a farmer in Nebraska who kills his wife and dumps her down a well. So that's
I hope not allegorical, but okay.
We'll say no more about that. But it was I sure enjoyed it. It was a ripper. It was a comedy. I loved it.
Well, a couple of movies that made me feel uplifted and good about life over the break that I saw were belatedly. So I watched Hurt Locker and I watched The Road.
Oh God!
And they were both my God. I mean, talk about
knee slappers.
Just got the chills at the end. Of this.
Yeah. Hurt Locker was excellent. I've not seen The Road. Just because I read the book and I just don't feel like being that fucking depressed. I'm already pretty bleak as it is. And I love Christian Bale. Viggo.
Viggo Mortensen. Yeah.
Viggo Mortensen. Yeah. I love him and I love Cormac McCarthy. I mean, I know you do too. Bloodmeridian and those. I'll just need to be in the same attitude towards Schindler's List. I saw Schindler's List on my birthday after like a marathon 90 minutes with my shrink. So I was already depressed. I was just already as low as I could be. I was just depressed and miserable. It was raining out. It was a grim November day. And I was like, fuck it. I'm already in the, just mood wise, I'm in the toilet. So I'm going to go see Schindler's because, obviously the movie's not going to cheer me up. And I was just destroyed. And it was just the lowest I think I've ever been. So when I feel that bad, I'll go watch The Road. But Hurt Locker was very enjoyable.
I made out during Schindler's List.
Yeah, that's from Seinfeld.
Yeah, it is from Seinfeld. That was, there you go. I mean, that was an ending. I mean, when he's getting ready to escape, everyone's been liberated and he's getting ready to take off in that car. And he's doing that whole thing. Speaking of Seinfeld, there was a great thing with Judge Reinhold where he did a similar bit at the end with Seinfeld's parents.
Yeah.
And, and that was a weepy moment. That was, I got choked up with that. I mean, how can you not? I mean, that was
they cut to the gravesite and the Jews putting the rocks on his, I was just destroyed. And then, this actually happened. There was a pretty empty theater because it was the middle of the day and everybody clears out. And I noticed that it's just me and this super, super old couple behind me. And the woman, the wife has to get up and leave. She's just, beside herself. And the old man's sitting there and he looks vaguely, Eastern European, just this old man. And he's staring at me, giving me this really weird look. And so we get up and we're both just kind of like, wow, huh? And he gestures to where his wife has left. And he says in this extremely thick accent, he says, she kept saying how much you reminded us or her of our son. And I was like, oh, fuck, don't say that.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So now the writer in me, that absolutely happened, but the writer in me is writing this whole backstory, right? Like, oh, my God, they lost their son at Dachau or something. It's just Jesus Christ. I went to my car and I just sat and cried for like an hour.
Oh, my God.
Just the worst. I was like, why did you have to drop that on me, old man? I was like, do you want to adopt me? Just hold my arms out. Daddy, Papa, It's awful.
Good Lord.
Oh, my God. Don't do that to me.
Yeah, well, on that note.
Yes, let's talk about soup. Hey, Paula.
Hey.
Here's a good segue.
Yeah, I even forgot to start the show. We're so, you know, there's just, it's such a slow news week. It's just like 20 minutes and a half an hour of movie talk and pop culture. And
there's just nothing to talk about.
It's a Bob and Elvis show. Bob Seska here in Pennsylvania, Elvis Dingledane there in Nebraska. And today's show sponsored by Bubble Genius, of course. Bubble Genius sent me just gigantic boxes of all kinds of good stuff.
Me too.
I got a gift basket that had champagne in there and all of their holiday soaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
And an Ann Coulter voodoo doll, poodoo doll. And then a bunch of other things. I mean, just a variety of different soaps. The buried treasure soap. So I was using that in the shower, pretending like I was a naked pirate. Shower. That's
well,
always
when
fun.
Don't I do that?
And then, well, then you include sobbing. When you do your naked pirate, you just cry. You make yourself weep. And Bubble Genius is, of course, the home of hilarious, all-natural, eco-friendly products for bath, body, and mental well-being. They've got, well, I get to specials in a bit. We'll talk about specials in the next round. But, yeah, I mean, this is, it's just, it's the holidays are over. And, you know, it's time to celebrate New Year. So, actually, they've got champagne soap on a rope.
Nice.
Yeah. It's it actually looks like a little bottle of champagne. And all the fun and none of the hangover is what they say. And what is, or they say, or coyote arm. I'm not familiar with what the coyote arm is.
That's when you have to gnaw your own arm off to get away from the dog that you went to bed with because you're so drunk.
Oh, there you go. Thank you. See how much of a lightweight I am. I just don't know these drinking terms. These drinking terms. And of course, when you go to Bubble Genius, make sure to enter the promo code Bob and Elvis, BOBANDELVIS, and get 15% off your entire order. There's another politically appropriate special that I will reveal the next time around. So we'll talk about that in just a little bit. Pure products, pure genius, bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Elvis into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Elvis Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
By the way, Bubble Genius now the exclusive sponsor of the Bob and Elvis Show.
Nice.
Yeah, we have lost Pomegranate Journeys, but best of luck to them because they're moving on to bigger and better things. And if you follow Pomegranate Journeys, you'll find out exactly what that is. I don't know if I'm necessarily privy to talk about it, but suffice to say, we have single-handedly launched Pomegranate Journeys into the stratosphere.
Excellent.
Of tour companies. So,
wait, does that mean their next journeys will be into outer space?
Yeah, that's right. Bicycle trips on Mars.
That I would sign up for.
Right.
There's some damn good off-roading on Mars.
So politics. This is kind of a political show, though you wouldn't know it by listening
to
the last half hour. Yeah. Right.
When there's politics happening.
So you and I were kind of goofing off for, you know, I've barely blogged at all. And
Well, 'tis the season.
You know, I've been, you know, look, I deserve to have a little bit of a blogging reprieve. I mean, I've been doing that every day. I mean, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, since I really started seriously working on that blog on bobseska.com in November of 2007. And then prior to that, it was Huffington Post, and then prior to that, it was the previous version of the blog. So it goes back to, like, 2005, basically, is how, you know, my blogging career is now going into its sixth year. And so, you know, it's the holidays. There's not a lot going on. What was I going to do? Blog the goddamn snowstorm? Who cares? It's snow.
Lots of blogging the snowstorm, though.
I mean, I would have liked to have ripped into what was happening in New York by way of the airplanes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I did some travel. And you and I, you know, we tend to be on planes a lot. And so, you know, I think I had a layover that lasted an extra 3 hours or something like that because of high winds in Philadelphia. So I was in a terminal for an extra 2 hours, and then I sat on the tarmac in an airplane for an extra hour. And I'm bitching up a storm. Mm-hmm. I'm just pissed and fired up that, you know, I have to sit there. I mean, it's excruciating enough to sit on, you know, for a 6'4" guy, sit on an airplane in a coach seat for any longer than I necessarily have to.
Yeah.
And then to be there for an extra hour, it's like, oh, goddamn, oh, poop. And, you know, and then I'm reading about these people stuck in New York in either on the tarmac or in the terminal for days.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Yeah, that's it's amazing how snow can just, you know, paralyze, especially D.C. I mean, you and I are, you know, D.C. guys, and just a flake, like a single flake, could touch down somewhere, and the entire city would the entire metroplex would shut down. It's just ridiculous.
I think Don Geronimo used to say, if you spit on the Beltway, that's a major traffic
it's a crisis.
Delay. Someone spits on the Beltway.
I had school closed in Northern Virginia for rain. At one point. I'm not even kidding.
I think I remember that. It was like a hurricane threat. There was like the threat of something happening possibly, and it missed us. I mean, we ended up not. I remember missing school there because the potential for a massive rainstorm.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then remember that blizzard we got in, was it 87?
Yeah.
In high school, that just shut us down for like a whole week.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That was. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah. So I mean, if you're a kid and you're listening in, ask your parents to move you to Washington D.C. because you'll never go to school.
Right, in the winter. Yeah, from November to April.
But I mean, while
out here, of course, it's completely out here. It's, you know, unless literally an iceberg falls on the town, like if an airborne iceberg lands on the school, maybe they'll you know, it'll be an hour late opening.
Yeah.
But otherwise, fuck it. You're going to school. It's amazing.
God, I'm so done with this. Maybe I'm getting old. I'm an old man.
Yeah.
But I'm just sick of the East Coast winters. They're just miserable. I mean, especially here in Pennsylvania, because everything turns brown and gray and just
I know.
Fucking
it's one
hideous.
Of those days today. I was putting the trash out this morning, and it's unusually warm, but there's this crappy gray snow everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's misty and rainy and shitty. It just makes you want to fucking kill yourself.
That's right. I mean, the weather forecast ought to just be rainy and shitty. It's going to be rainy, snowy, and shitty for the next 3 months. And dark, by the way. Oh, yeah. By the way, we're going to start fucking with the clocks in November, and it's going to be dark, too.
At 3 o'clock. At 3 o'clock, you just start getting dark, So enjoy that.
Oh, my God,
Your seasonal affective disorder, so.
That's right. It's awful.
Stop whining.
Okay. All right.
We had a nice lay down, like a couple, you know, like a 2-inch cover on Christmas Eve, so that was lovely. So everything got, all the filth got covered up. All the fucking Farm of Doom nightmare. I mean, the Farm of Doom really is starting to cave in. Mm-hmm. We had this last year, this unbelievable winter, unbelievable blizzard snow winter, and it got in the groundwater. Mm-hmm. All that snow had to go somewhere, and it just sort of stayed. It just sort of sank to the top of the water table and stayed there. So the whole back 20 feet of just this whole stretch of the back of the Farm of Doom is just underwater. I mean, just a swamp. I can't even mow it. The mower just gets bogged down.
So it's like a scene from Lord of the Rings or something. Like you're expecting Gollum to be leading Frodo through there.
Yeah, bogums or whatever. Some fucking thing should be living in there,
right,
jumping out at me. Yeah, it's awful. I mean, I'm looking at pictures of when we first moved here and just how gorgeous the lawn was, how perfect. And we had, so it was just a series of things, a swamp out back, and it was a really bad year for the grubs. Those big, fat, disgusting grubs.
Oh, yeah, the grubs, right.
They eat the roots, right? So they kill off these giant chunks. And your lawn just becomes mobile. Like, it just shifts. it's like an orange peel that's just been peeled but still on the orange. It's just sort of shifting. And I'm sorry, the stuff they sell to kill those things come in, like, bags the size of coffee that you'd buy like a small, and it's like $11 and it covers, you know, it covers up to 20 square feet. I'm like, 20 square feet? I've got like 8 acres here. What the fuck?
That's right.
I can't kill these things. So I just had to let them chew the shit out of my yard. It just looks awful.
Yeah.
So the Farm of Doom may not be long for this world.
You're just going to set it ablaze. You're just going to light
well,
it up.
I'm reminded of a Simpsons episode where Homer decided that he'd go work at the bowling alley.
Uh-huh.
And he plays Mr. Burns' head like a bongo on his way out. He's on a golf cart. And Lenny goes, "Hey, way to play the boss's head like a bongo, hobo." And he's playing his, and then he crosses this bridge. He lights a match and literally burns the bridge behind him, literally, to go work at the bowling alley where Barney works. And that was his dream job. And then when that caves in and falls apart, he has to come back. And there's two doors, one for applicants and one for supplicants. And the supplicant door you have to crawl through.
Right.
So that's I'm very much put in mind of the burning the bridge that, yeah, that the Farm of Doom may meet a tragic gas fire sometime soon. That it may, and I probably shouldn't be saying this, you know, out loud and for insurance purposes, but there you are.
Well, I mean, so while we were crying and lamenting our sad lives, and sleeping and taking a break,
sleep.
The president and Congress were actually doing shit.
Yeah,
which was amazing to see. I mean, you know, they passed START. I mean, they ratified that.
Yes, excellent.
Don't ask, don't tell was repealed.
Yeah,
a food safety law was passed. Healthcare for 9/11 first responders passed. 1 year extension of the unemployment benefits, passed. Extension of tax cuts for the middle class, passed. They funded the government, that passed too. And then there was, and I was looking all over for this. I saw Rachel Maddow did a whole thing about all of the things that Congress and the president did for the troops. It was like a list of benefits and bills passed that support the troops. In some way, whether it was the healthcare. Well, no, wait, it wasn't the healthcare, but there was something about additional funding to help soldiers with post-traumatic stress.
Nice.
And there maybe like a half a dozen other things. And I in time for the show, I couldn't find it. But there was a whole segment that Maddow did. So, I mean, it was just a variety of things. And I love the meme that was going around the cable news. Just before the holidays, just as the president was leaving for Hawaii, they were talking about how, you know, no one's going to complain that he's going on vacation. I think the Republicans want him to go on vacation at this point.
Yeah, seriously, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, stop doing
too much.
Shit. Yeah, yeah.
Stop working. Yeah.
And so what I kept thinking about is if you're a Republican voter, you know, or, you know, so maybe an independent voter who voted Republican in November, what are you thinking? As you
what
see,
are you voting for?
Exactly. Yeah, as you see,
exactly
the Democrats.
What exactly are you voting for?
Right. The Democrats did all of these things, and the president did all of these things. And you might say, well, too little, too late. But it's not too little. It just might have been too late. And but they did. I mean, they did manage to make it around Republican filibusters. And so
now they're talking. Reid is really talking seriously about filibuster reform now.
Yeah,
which may come back and bite them in the ass when they, you know, when the tables are turned and they need it.
Yeah.
But if you look at the filibuster record, if you look at how it's unconscionable. The biggest fucking crybaby sissy bitches with this filibustering. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
That this is how government operates. I mean, just a straight out flat 51, you know, a real majority, 51% should be all it takes. I just don't understand this supermajority bullshit. Congress is so fucked in its stupid white fat ass. I hate it. I hate Congress.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I hate Congress.
And again, going back to independent voters who voted Republican. Thank you. What are you thinking exactly when you see the Republicans filibustering health care for 9/11 first responders, for fuck's sake?
Right.
You supported these sons of bitches? They were blocking. And, you know, this is not news to any of you listening in, because we all watched Jon Stewart, a guy who hosts a comedy show, push this law through. I mean, let's make no mistake.
That's pretty sad.
I've been critical of Jon Stewart lately, but this, he kicked some serious ass on this thing and actually made it happen.
Yeah,
and it wasn't some partisan thing. It's not like you know, Sean Hannity getting up there and pissing, you know, battery acid for 5 weeks to get the Patriot Act passed or whatever. It's nothing like that. It's not like some sort of weird, you know, we're not pushing the privatization of Social Security here in the Bush administration. This was a comedian on Comedy Central getting something done that benefits the heroes of 9/11.
Yeah.
There was no reason whatsoever for the Republicans to block that other than to say, fuck you, Mr. President.
Yeah.
That was the only thing. That was the only reason.
I can't wait for the campaign ads around that from our side. I mean, just the sheer volume of fodder the Republicans have built up over all this filibustering, over all this, you know, naysaying. I just cannot wait for the campaign ads.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't imagine what – I don't see what they're going to run on in 2012. I just don't know what – I guess just more of 2010. Fuck the black guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Can't have that black guy in there. Gotta get that nigger out of there. Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's all they've got. It's making me sick.
Right.
I can't wait. I mean, in some ways, I can't wait to see it. And in some ways, I can't wait to stick my head in a hole.
Well, I mean, this is the mistake that a lot of us and a lot of them and a lot of media people are making right now is to apply some sort of legislative agenda to the Republicans. They have no agenda. They don't give a flying shit about extending tax cuts for the wealthiest 2%. They don't give a flying shit about repealing Social Security or repealing healthcare or anything like that. They don't care about policy whatsoever. They have no interest in any policy at all. What they want to do, their motivation is to simply
get reelected
and stymie the president.
That's entirely John McCain is the perfect. McCain is the perfect symbol, the perfect metaphor for the entire. It's just the absolute flim-flammery and flip-floppery of somebody that used to have a conscience and used to have some shred of honor, just flailing in the wind, trying to ass kiss to this radical right, you know, teabagging kind of constituency, going against everything he's always stood for, just to get reelected, just to keep that giant-headed buffoon that ran against him out of there.
Yeah.
You know, just that's it. That's all they care about. It's and the sheer volume of policy that's come out of this White House has just been staggering.
Yeah, I mean, just in the past month alone, it's been huge.
Yeah.
And speaking of McCain, Liz Winstead on Twitter had a funny as shit tweet today that just cracked me up, and I didn't retweet it yet. But she writes, I mean, it's like McCain wakes up every morning, eats a big bowl of hate loops, and starts spewing like a salad shooter.
Yeah.
That's good. That's exactly what he does. I mean,
he's
just completely lost his fucking mind. I think during the campaign, you could make a case for him having sold out to get elected. But no, I don't think that's it. I think he's lost his fucking mind. I think he's just gone around the bend.
A little old man dementia.
Because he never shut it off. He sold out his values or whatever values he had.
If he had any shred of dignity and courage, moral courage left, he would have come out of 2008, supporting the president, being the bigger man, being an advocate in Congress for at least the things that he had run on in 2000 and the things he had said, you know, the things he'd put on record as supporting, the repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. If the generals were for it, then he completely went back on that. I mean, if he'd had any and completely refuting Sarah Palin. I mean, if he had stepped up and said, you know what, my bad. Jesus Christ, what a fucking train wreck that was.
Yeah.
Sorry. But no, she has to come and campaign for him to get the teabaggers in line. Just shameful.
Yeah.
Absolutely shameful. They should sell his plot at Arlington Cemetery. I'm not even kidding. Somebody with some real honor. And I hope I wish he would read my tweets, because I fucking hate that guy.
Yeah. I
despise him for being so weak.
That's right. Either they remove his plot, or they put on his gravestone his happy birthday wishes to Snooki.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Because big fat coward. They don't bury cowards at Arlington Cemetery. My dad may be headed for Arlington Cemetery. My dad's not a fucking coward like John McCain. Go to hell, John McCain.
Right.
Ugh.
Right.
Just shameful. Absolutely shameful. What a bullet we dodged in 2008. No matter what you think about, no matter what you think about Obama, go and look at the record. Go and look at what McCain has done since 2008 and tell me we didn't dodge the biggest bullet. in his ass not getting the White House.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, as we all know, his decision to choose Sarah Palin as the running mate. And this is why, I mean, even now he ought to do it. Because, I mean, what does he have to lose? No one likes Sarah Palin. To actually say, you know what, I fucked up and I almost endangered the country with a nincompoop as a vice presidential running mate.
Complete retard. Right. That would only help him at this point. He's got four more years to, or six, however many he's got now, to he's not, I don't think he's going to run again, is he? For God's sakes, he's 112 years old. So just, he's got nothing to lose. Come out, just lead the Republican charge against her. Somebody's going to have to. When the balloon pops on her for real, whatever scandal it is, it's going to be led by Republicans that are terrified of her getting the nomination. He ought to lead that shit. He right. ought to be the standard bearer. He's the one that brought her into the world. He needs to be the one to take her out.
Yeah. Exactly.
To paraphrase
Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby.
That's right. Well, I mean,
I love that movie himself. That always makes me laugh.
Yeah, you know what?
Showing my teeth.
Here's the kind of Elvis Presley, not Elvis Dingledee, but the Elvis Presley break I had. I actually had chocolate cake for breakfast. I mean, I was sitting there, sitting there eating in my underpants. Eating chocolate cake for breakfast and watching that, and then I had to watch the thing on YouTube, the himself video.
Yeah,
you know, as I ate chocolate cake for breakfast, I'm watching Bill Cosby talking about eating chocolate cake for breakfast.
We have chocolate cake. What do you want? Chocolate cake
coming up. Slice
Dad
it.
Shroom, shroom, shroom.
Dad is great. Give us the chocolate cake.
Chocolate cake. Right. Then these children who were singing praises to me lied on me
and said, we wanted eggs and milk, and Dad made us eat this.
And my wife's head split open.
And split, yeah. I've never seen someone actually have a conniption.
Oh God, he was. That was
fire. That's right. That was just such a quint. I mean, probably, arguably, the greatest stand-up special, of all time.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, just every bit was gold. Absolute gold. I've always loved the line. You know, why do you do cocaine? Well, it enhances your personality. Yes, but what if you're an asshole? I just love that line. It's just he was. I mean. Now I don't get him much anymore, but that stand up act was
And how un-PC was it? I mean, there was a shitload of stuff in there about he and his wife, well, specifically his wife, beating their children with a yardstick.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean,
it's just unapologetic. It's honest and real and unapologetic and just hilarious. All the stuff about the parenting is just genius.
Yeah, yeah.
and he's right. And you and I are both in this group of the not real parents. If you only have one child, we're both parents of only children.
That's right. We're
not real parents because we know who did it.
Yeah, that's because we know who did it. If you have one child and she says, or he or she says, what is it? He says, I didn't do it.
I don't know.
Then you have to seek help. You have to take it away. I think he says you have to take the toy away or whatever, because the child is obviously projecting real life personality onto a toy is the implication.
Yeah. We're not real parents.
Yeah. Right. Oh no. If the child says, "Will you stop touching me?"
And then you have an only child. Take it away.
Right. Then you have to take it away. You stop touching me.
Will you stop touching me?
And then when he does the sound of what's happening upstairs. Right. Don't make me come up there. Yeah. So back to John McCain and choosing Sarah Palin. The couple of Sarah Palin items, a few Sarah Palin items I've accumulated. First of all, and no one likes her. And so it's time for John McCain should apologize because not even Alaska likes her. I mean, she's got a 33% favorable rating in Alaska. Okay. Meanwhile, in the amongst the potential GOP candidates for the 2012 nomination, she has slid 18 points in the most recent poll. That's a CBS poll, I want to say.
Wow.
And
who's at the top of that? Romney still?
Let's see. Yeah, it's I think it's Huckabee.
Oh my God.
I think Huckabee is at the top, then Romney, and then Gingrich.
there is no fathomable universe where Huckabee wins over Obama. I mean, that just it just the name, just the visual of it is such a giant step backwards.
Yeah.
In terms of Americana, just in terms of representing the real American people, the Barack Obama, Mike Huckabee. you just go, what the fuck? Let's go back to 1936, shall we?
Well, I mean, I believe that it's going to be. I mean, my prediction, and I don't know exactly who's going to get the nomination because it's likely Mitt Romney. Yeah. But it could also be Sarah Palin. I mean, you just don't know. I mean, Barack Obama was way behind at this point in the 2008 polling.
Oh, yeah.
So it could be Sarah Palin. I still believe, though, and this is my solid, this is the most solid prediction you can get out of me at this point, is that Newt Gingrich is going to be the vice presidential nominee.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I honestly believe that. I think Newt Gingrich is positioning himself as the next Cheney.
Wow,
you know, because he's one of these sort of pseudo intellectual conservatives. He's got that kind of mastermind behind the scenes quality, but he's not top of the ticket material.
No. Too many skeletons in the too many dead bodies in the basement.
Yeah,
just like Cheney.
And
you just think back on Bush Cheney, and you just go, "Oh my God!" Like, just how insidious really was it? I mean, just Cheney is terrifying to me. There's a big chunk of my brain just blotted all that out. Just like, oh my God, Dick Cheney, just how terrifying is that guy?
Right.
I mean, he really looks like he would just kill you if you crossed him the wrong way. He would just literally murder you.
That's right. I mean, like, there was
just shove a vice presidential pin in your eye.
There was a combination of three things with him. He had the CEO mentality. He had the, you know, sort of the old school Cold Warrior mentality. Yeah. And then he had, on top of all of that, the fact that he could keel over at any second. So why the fuck should he care what happens?
Right. He's got the fuck it mentality. Yeah,
that's
I'm,
right.
I'm one foot in the grave anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to be dead when this all goes down. So fuck all of you. So long, suckers.
Yeah.
Good
he
luck.
He reminds me of George C. Scott in Firestarter. That kind of guy. Like, just terrifying. Holy shit.
That is, my hat's off to you. That's one hell of a reference, but that's exactly right. Yeah.
Didn't he kill somebody by breaking their nose up into their brain in that movie?
Yeah.
I just remember him being, I think I've only seen that movie once, like when I was a kid, and he just scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
That is the vibe I get now from God only knows. I mean, someday, literally, the country may just be taken over by robots built by Halliburton and Cheney's cloned brain would be in all of them. We'll all just be slaves to Cheney cloned robots.
Yeah, and they're all like Carl Ruprecht Cronin from Hellboy. You know, just these automatons, these mutilated automatons who function with sand as their blood, and they've got a wind up heart that they get. You know, like this big steampunk heart.
Hellboy
like,
heart on.
They're just winding themselves up to move
I just
along.
Didn't like number two as much as you did. I wish I did.
Oh my God, they're just so. They're both of them are just, and number two is just. Is so much better than number one.
Oh, you're crazy.
Yeah, the Hellboy movies, yeah.
No, one was fucking awesome. One kicked two's ass.
I
just
know.
Did not dig two. Like, there was something just off about it. I don't know what it, like, the comedy of it, I guess, the humor in it was just off. And they changed Abe's voice, and I didn't like that. Because I think in the first one, it was David Hyde Pierce, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, but that was a studio decision, because it was originally...
No, it was a good one, because it was originally the guy that did it.
It was Doug Jones, yeah, it was Doug Jones, and then they brought in David Hyde Pierce to replace the voice, which you know, I mean, okay. Well, I mean, it was a little bit of celeb kind of casting to put another name in the credits, but, you know, I thought, and I hate Family Guy, and I hate the Seth MacFarlane cartoon shows because I think they're all so derivative. But Seth MacFarlane on Twitter is hilarious, and Seth MacFarlane as Johann Kraus in Hellboy 2. Yes, it was Seth MacFarlane doing the voice of the sort of the German vapor character who was in that vapor containment suit. It was so fucking funny.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
I don't know what. I guess I have to see it again. I mean, visually, I love Guillermo del Toro, and Pan's Labyrinth is one of the great movies of all time, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, just an absolute classic. Mm. And I can't wait for anything. I will be first nighter arch for every one of his movies, but Hellboy 2 just missed me for some reason. Yeah, it visually stunning. I mean, I love to look at it, but just went past me, went through me.
As you can see, we're in total autopilot mode. We'll go right from Sarah Palin to Hellboy. Not to get too self-analytical about it, but that's the way this show happens. But one last thing about Sarah Palin. You know, Ches Pazienza at deusexmalcontent.com, one of my favorite blogs, he did a whole compilation of the quotes of the year. Like all the, I think all of his quotes of the day, he just compiled in one big post, and made up, you know, sort of this list of quotes of the year, and this one jumped out at me, and I forgot that he actually said this, but I would say this would be my quote of the year. And the quote is, Sarah Palin is a fucking retard, and that was of all people, that was Stephen Colbert on February 9th.
Wow.
I mean, I didn't remember that he had said that. Wow. And then I was kind of shocked that he did.
Yeah.
Because that's a little straightforward. Yeah. I don't remember the context of it, but Stephen Colbert did in fact say Sarah Palin is a fucking retard.
Yeah. Yeah, and she is. There was something on Sullivan. One reason I hate the holidays, and I hate when Sullivan takes breaks. Andrew Sullivan on The Atlantic, The Daily Dish, because as much as even the back of my brain knows that most of his content is run by the people that take over when he's gone, it feels off when he's gone.
Yeah.
The content and the mood of it and the vibe and the passion and everything, it just seems off. Mm. But it's still the best repository, the best running repository of anti-Palin, of just keeping track of Palin's idiocy.
Yeah.
And they posted something she said on Fox News or some fucking thing about how she gets handwritten letters from environmentalists because of her show, and they're on fancy stationery written in pencil.
Yeah.
Just another one of these fucking psychotic things she makes up. And I can absolutely see her sitting in her gold-plated toilet or whatever and thinking, let's see, what's made out of trees? Oh, pencils. That's a good one. They write me fancy stationery letters on with pencil. Like, you know, because who writes letters in pencil? Who write, other than like a four-year-old?
Right.
So it just how fucking fake and retarded and insane she is. It's unbelievable.
Really, really is. And I think the rest of the world
takes her seriously.
I mean, even I think people who once supported her are really falling off the bandwagon with her. I mean, how could they not?
Yeah.
I mean,
she's the quintessential give her enough rope and she'll hang herself sort of personality.
Right.
I mean, that's why I've been just dying for her to get the nomination so we can really see, you know, what a train wreck she really is.
Oh,
I mean,
God.
Just how unstaffed, unprofessional. Yeah. I mean, she might have, if she had been smart, she'd have lasted, you know, she'd have run out her term and spent that whole time, because obviously it doesn't take a lot to be governor of Alaska. I mean, she could have spent that whole time getting a paycheck and you know, being in like debate camp for that whole time and charging herself up and being serious. But she did exactly the ass opposite of what really would have helped her politically in a real environment, not this sissy pants, poopy pants kind of electorate that thinks she's awesome.
Yeah,
are the most unserious people on earth.
She didn't take the serious approach. She didn't take the serious, you know, like, please take me seriously as a presidential contender approach. She took the white trash approach. She said, you know, look, I'm being offered piles of cash to go around and screech into a microphone and pretend I've written a couple of books, and that's what I'm going to do. Because fuck all of you, I want the money. And you know what? In some cases, that's admirable. But then don't purport yourself to be a serious candidate for president.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to go off and you want to be a reality show doofus, go be a reality show doofus and leave the country alone.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that's just the fact that she took that grifter turn says, you know, a world of information about Sarah Palin's motivation.
Yeah,
and if you want to support her and take her seriously, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
Okay? And I don't care how smart you are or how smart you believe you are. If you're supporting Sarah Palin, you're a fucking moron. You're just as stupid as she is for buying into it because you're being suckered. That's right.
Yeah. Gullible.
That's right.
I mean, I don't think there's any more dangerous trait in a politician than shamelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And she absolutely has no shame because it comes from the first, the most awful trait of a narcissist is a complete lack of self-awareness, which sounds strange in a narcissist, but it's true. I mean, the complete lack of self, you know, recrimination of being able to apply the rules of the rest of the world to yourself.
Yeah.
And this shamelessness is terrifying because it means you will say and do anything. And her base, whatever is left of it, the 10 or 18%, you know, out there, whatever's left of this psychotic base, is they're exactly the same. I mean, they see themselves in her, and that's terrifying. Yeah. I mean, I get I've talked on the show before about these church basement email threads that I get because I live in fucking Mayberry douchebag, you know, Nebraska, and I get one just shamelessly awful, just. The people that send them just absolutely must have no shame, and that's terrifying. This rant about healthcare, about, you know, they always have these clever little analogies, these clever metaphors, and it's a Republican dad who sends his deeply liberal granola-eating daughter to college, and she gets a 4.0 and comes back and is bragging about it, but how her roommate is a douchebag and got a 2.0, and he's applying the healthcare rule. He's like, well, stupid, dumbass liberal daughter, why don't you just give her two of your points, and then you'll both have a B or whatever, because you worked hard. Why don't you just redistribute your grades? And I'm like, oh my, what? And then that same week that I got that email, the front page of our local newspaper is begging for money for a local girl who got in a fucking car accident and has no health care.
Right.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? Yeah. I want to tear my hair out. These are the same people. The front page of our local newspaper, please, God, donate. This girl was badly, horribly burned in this car accident. God. She got it just needs grafts, and her face is all burned up. And she's this beautiful girl, a college girl, going for just this wonderful girl, but just has no health care. And the front page of the paper begging for, and I'm like, oh, what do you mean? That sounds redistributive to me. Why should I give my hard-earned money?
Yeah,
so the churches and the community should take care. Oh my God! Fuck you, people. Mm-hmm. Seriously.
That's right.
Ugh.
That's right. And you know, it's funny too. They were talking about that. Speaking of government involvement, and you know, there was in fact, they talked about this on whoever the fill-in guy was, the producer of the Rachel Maddow show last night, filled in for her last night.
Yeah.
And so, he's a good guy, smart guy. Not as good with snark and as Rachel, but still solid. And so they were talking about how you know, there's this conflict between, you know what, I want to take that back. I want to say it was Sam Cedar on Olbermann. Well, one of those two shows. They were talking about how there's this conflict between, you know, the handling of the snowstorm between the private sector and government. Like, what's the proper role here? Could the private sector adequately? Yeah, it was Sam Cedar because Tom Hartman was on, and they were they were discussing the commons with the roadways and who maintains those roadways. Should it be the private sector? Should it be the government? Where you had small government people bitching about why the roads weren't plowed.
Of course.
You know, I mean,
absolutely.
What do you want? The government? What do you want? Government involvement, or do you want to wait for Cletus up the block to come down with his fucking shovel?
Right, with his profit motive.
Yeah.
You want the guy, you want the shared community, the communal communist, if you will, you know, everybody pitches in and then the government comes and does it without a profit motive? Or do you want the guy who will, bilk the shit out of you? Suddenly now it's $80 an hour to plow you out because, supply and demand, bitches. Yeah. I don't get it. The woman that sent me this email, I want to say, okay, I have one child in the local school system. You have four. That means I'm redistributing to three of your children.
That's right.
So how's that? Can I have that back? Give me that back. I'm paying for three of your children. You're paying for one of mine. So go fuck you. God damn, that makes me mad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you know what? After we do this real quick, there's a story that I've been sitting on for a couple of weeks now. About that very thing.
Okay.
About that very thing. We'll get to that. Red State Welfare is what I'm talking about.
Yes.
Can we have it back, please? President Bartlett line. Pure Products, Pure Genius, BubbleGenius.com is the exclusive sponsor, the Bob and Elvis Show. And speaking of John McCain, they've got... you've got to go pick this up. At least go check out the likeness Old Man McSame John McCain's Soap on a Rope. Because this guy will not just shut the HE double hockey sticks up. They're reviving their John McCain Soap on a Rope. He's got a remarkably lifelike pasty complexion. It is very pasty. And he's bay rum scented.
Oh my God.
Because don't all old guys smell like bay rum?
The way they're able to get their likenesses in that soap is truly amazing.
Staggeringly close.
It really is.
And about the head's about the same size as I imagine. It's actual size of the head. It's, you know, maybe about the size of a Tangelo, I think, John McCain's head. Because he is, what, 3 feet tall?
Yeah.
And he's like practically, it's just a little angry man.
Little angry man.
That's right. And they've got the one squinty eye and the one eye still wide open. Poor McCain. Sometimes I feel a little bad. I mean, the guy's had a rough life, but
yeah,
but that's no excuse to lose his fucking spadoinkle at the drop of a hat, which is what he's done.
Absolutely.
So go to bubblegenius.com and check out. In fact, the directed address, if you go to bubblegenius.com/mcsame-sore.html.
Pow.
So, which is sore as soap on a rope. Oh, my God. So, of course, at Bubble Genius, they have the most ingenious products, the most hilarious things you've ever seen in soap form and other bath and body products. And plus, Bubble Genius strives to be good to your skin while also being good to the planet. This is indeed a bonus. Most of their packaging is recyclable. They source their ingredients as close to home as possible, thereby supporting other local and domestic businesses while cutting down on fossil fuel consumption by not having stuff shipped from across the globe. They do their best to use organic ingredients when they're accessible and affordable, and their soaps are free of chemical detergents and
surfactants.
And you can also check out their sale items at bubblegenius.com/sale.html. And don't forget also to look at their champagne soap on a rope for New Year's. It's pure products, pure genius, bubblegenius.com.
The Bob and Elvis Show.
That's right. And so thanks again to Bubble Genius for sending along. I got a gigantic box with a sort of a holiday gift basket of stuff from Bubble Genius. And then a variety of other little soap items in a couple of different boxes. It was nice to come home to that. As after being on the road, I came back to Pennsylvania to find a bunch of Bubble Genius products. So, very cool.
Huzzah.
Yeah, indeed. So... what else do we have? So there's a variety of other political things that just sort of popped up over the break. Red State Welfare. We're going to talk about this. Alaska, speaking of Sarah Palin, gets $1.84 in federal spending for every dollar it pays in federal taxes.
Yeah. So welfare state.
That's right. It's a welfare state. They pay a dollar for every dollar it pays in federal taxes. It gets $1.84 back. So 84 cents on the dollar. No, it wouldn't be 84 cents. It would be $1.84 on the dollar.
On the dollar, yeah.
Right. They get back.
But, so, yeah, they basically get all of it back.
Mm-hmm.
Almost. Yeah. And I mean, what's the number for Massachusetts? Taxachusetts. Isn't it negative 16 cents, something like that?
Yeah, let me see. Well, New York, it's 79 cents on the dollar. So New York pays, you know, for every dollar it pays in taxes, only gets back 79 cents. So it loses, whatever that is, 21 cents.
Yeah.
You know, for every tax dollar it pays. Yeah. Meanwhile, Alaska enjoys a $2 billion plus budget surplus, mm-hmm. while New York faces a huge deficit, right? And South Carolina gets $1.35 on the dollar.
Of course.
And Kentucky gets $1.51 on the dollar.
And these are all the states that bitch about big government.
Right. Exactly. And these blue states, California, 78 cents on the dollar. New Jersey, 61 cents on the dollar.
Yeah. That's what I love about the Midwest. I mean, Nebraska's like right nestled right in the middle. Like it's, I think Nebraska's like a dollar two or something. I mean, it's like really right comfortably within the margin.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But those numbers don't take into account, I don't think the Midwestern numbers take into account all the crop subsidies and everything else. I don't think all that is mixed in there.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a lot higher if you mixed in the federal crop subsidies.
Right, right. Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't know if that's factored in.
I don't think it is. Because that was one of my big things to make up. I was really praying when I was arguing with some wingnut out here that the number would be higher, that Nebraska would be a bigger welfare state. It's really not.
Yeah.
But when I looked at it at the time, it was a couple of years ago, I think I determined that those numbers didn't include, you know, fucking ethanol breaks and the tax, you know, the crop subsidies and all that.
Yeah. And wasn't South Carolina talking about states' rights? Well, they all do. They all talk about it. Texas talking about states' rights. They, you know, the smaller federal government, they don't want federal government interfering with the states. And South Carolina famously in the Civil War seceding over that idea. And then, but I mean, it's made a resurgence recently where they want, you know, they don't want the federal government intruding, which goes back to the West Wing President Bartlett rejoinder.
Yeah. Can
the
we great have 10 yeah. words? Yeah.
Can we have it back, please? Yeah.
Yeah. Great line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just two on the nose for real politics, right? I mean, you'd get lambasted for that in the real world.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's Bartlett. I watched A Few Good Men last night on the high definitions.
Yeah.
And really, you can see Sorkin really feeling his chops out. Like, it's like an early Sorkin. I think it worked better on stage than it did in a film.
Right.
It felt too scripted, especially with maybe if they'd had a better actress than Demi Moore in there. But there's one rant when she meets Danny at the baseball field, and she has one rant there where she literally has to take a breath, where she draws a breath in her speech because it's too much for her as an actress. Get somebody else in there. Get Alice and Janney in there, for God's sake. Somebody that can take a Sorkin dialogue and not have to fucking gasp, take a breath in the middle of it.
Well, here's an item that I chose just for you, and this is speaking of the Civil War. The fancy that the Virginia school textbooks are fucked up. I don't know if you saw this story.
Under this guy, McDonald or whatever, I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah, and Talking Points memo, David Taintor.
Ooh, Taintor.
Surprise, surprise, historians have found...
Worst superhero bad guy name ever.
Taintor. He's a character, like a He-Man character. Yeah. Skeletor's sidekick, Taintor.
I cracked myself up.
Surprise, surprise, historians have found glaring errors in a textbook claiming that African Americans fought in large numbers for the South during the Civil War. And you remember that. There was that story that was, you know, African Americans fought for the Confederacy. Well, they were forced to fight for the Confederacy.
Yeah,
they had no choice. And there weren't that
and
many.
Some were promised their freedom for it.
Yeah.
On both sides. And, you know, some fought for the British in the American Revolution, for Christ's sake, because Britain, thanks to Wilberforce, was a little more, had already done away with slavery by that point. They were saying, hey, guys want to get your freedom, you can shoot a couple of colonists in the ass for us.
Mm-hmm. I mean, right.
Long, complicated history there.
Well, they found some other errors in those textbooks. For example... Okay. They claim that the Confederacy included 12 states, which it didn't, and then the U.S. entered World War I in 1916. These are factually incorrect.
Those are in Virginia textbooks.
Virginia textbooks.
Like Tidewater Virginia, like Southern Virginia?
Yeah. Five professional scholars reviewed the books, with three of them finding disturbing results. State officials are scheduled to meet January 10th to review the results.
Jesus.
And the author of the textbook, Joy Masoff, defended her work, telling the Post, "As controversial as it is, I stand by what I write. I'm a fairly respected writer."
Oh, God.
I found that hilarious.
I never really think of textbooks as having like a single writer. You know, like it seems like they should be written by committees that know what the fuck they're talking about.
She relied primarily on an internet search to find out information about African Americans in the Confederacy, fighting for the Confederacy.
How many states did she say they were?
She said there were 12 states in the Confederacy.
No, 11.
Yeah. And she...
Which one did she put in there that wasn't, like, fucking Hawaii?
That's right.
I mean, how do you get that wrong?
Germany. Pretty, Germany was the...
Germany, they would have loved it.
Yeah.
They'd have felt right at home.
Right. And, she got her information from the Sons of Confederate Veterans.
Oh, that's a fine organization.
Yeah, reliable.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, well, I should talk. I mean, I'm all... My whole family's steeped in that. I've got... I mean, Jesus, I, as ironically, of course, but I have a CSA grave marker in my... in my front yard. No one really around here gets the irony, but I do. I've got pretty much all of my ancestry that was in that war was on the wrong side, was on the CSA side.
So. Yeah. Well, and also speaking of African Americans, this is one last item because we're running way late on the show now.
Way late.
You know, I don't know if you caught this. The Lorillard Tobacco Company lost a $71 million lawsuit. They had to pay $71 million in compensatory damages to the estate and son of a woman who died of lung cancer because Lorillard tried I think it was back in, I want to say in the 1950s, they tried to entice black children to become smokers by handing out free cigarettes to nice. Black children.
I'd like to see Don Draper dress that campaign up.
So if you're a smoker and you smoke Newports, Kent, or True cigarettes, you need to switch your brand or quit. Seriously. It's about time.
I'm totally caught up on Mad Men now, so we can totally – it's another thing I did over the break.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I mean, that was
– his wife can so go fuck herself. What a douche she is.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. They need to redeem her in season 5 somehow. I don't know how. But, oh, Lord, is she awful.
Yeah.
God.
I mean, but I want to say
that Don is a paragon of husbandhood or fatherhood, but good Lord.
Right.
How awful.
But I want to say this season of Mad Men could be the best season of a TV show ever. I mean, it's got to be way up there. I mean, I'm just trying to think of a season that was more perfect in just about every way. I mean, it was good.
Really, really well done.
Yeah. It was so good. Yeah, and I think, I mean, at least as far as the show goes, it was incredible. Because, I mean, like I've been saying all along, Don Draper became a human being in the show. I mean, I guess you've seen the episode in which he, you know, he's worried about, you know, the background check.
Background check, yeah.
From DOD.
Yeah, that was really the first, yeah. When he was stumbling around and like having the seizures, and you know, like feeling like he was going to have a heart attack, it was shocking.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really, it's like seeing Superman, you know, fall over or bleed or something. You know, you're like, oh my God, it's just so out of character. Because he was, for 3 seasons, he was such a, just a quintessential Iceman. I mean, nothing could touch him. Just a complete badass. Like I remember the scene with the woman that he was the wife of that piece of shit comic that he was banging for a while.
Yeah.
That when they were having dinner together at Lutece, and she goes to the restroom and he follows her, and he basically, I can't even say what he does on the radio. I mean, but there he physically assaults her right there in the restaurant sexually under her dress. I mean, it's just most unbelievable. You remember what I'm talking about?
I know exactly what you're talking about.
She's like, I'm not going to tell him what to do. I'm not
going
to
explain.
Fuck you. And, what?
Oh,
and
sorry about
he
that.
He gets up under her dress and makes a point. I'll put it that way. Makes a point digitally. Stunning. Like, that guy could not be affected by anything. That guy could do anything. Like,
yeah.
Oh, my God. And then to see him so reduced by such a simple thing. It was such a brilliant comeback to that, to the episode where they were in California, mm-hmm. and finally this, you know, finally what's his face has landed this deal, and now it's backfiring. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
I mean, that's the thing about Don Draper, and it was that scene that I really hated Don Draper. I mean, I fucking hated him. And then, you know what, you're not so much like Tony Soprano, you're not supposed to really like this guy. And
but
I think
guys, it's like Goodfellas. The show really has very few likable. I mean, Peggy may be really the only one that is truly likable.
Right.
You know, it really is a cast of bad guys. I mean, just not really nice people.
Yeah.
But it's also the times, you know, we look at it all the men are just horrible misogynists, just awful, you know, womanizers. But you know, everybody's just sort of, it's very Randian. I mean, it's very, the whole philosophy of the show is very Randian. So you're really not supposed to like everybody.
And this was one of the highlights of the season was Don's new secretary, Miss Blankenship. And this is one of my favorite Miss Blankenship clips.
Morning, Miss Blankenship. How was your surgery?
It was a nightmare. The ether and the blindness, and then I got the goggles.
So everything's good?
I'll tell you, I was blind, and now I see.
Well, good. If you need more time.
I'm fine, Roger. I'm kidding around here.
I'm kidding around here.
It was driving me crazy where I had seen her before, so I had to IMDb it. You know who that is?
Who?
She was the Karate Kid's mother.
No fucking way.
She was Daniel.
No.
Whatever. That's the
what?
Mother from Karate Kid.
No, no.
A movie I have, I swear to God.
Oh my
it's
God.
A movie I've seen a trillion times. So it was killing me where I'd seen that woman before. I'm like, I know that voice. I know the face. I know. And I Googled it and oh my God, it was Daniel Russo's mother, Mrs. Russo.
Randy Heller. Karate Kid. Randy yeah. Heller is this guy.
Yes.
Yeah, and
yeah.
You know what? She doesn't look on. I'm looking at IMDb now.
Yeah, they made her up to look a lot older as well.
Okay, all right. Well, that's yeah. Okay because she doesn't in her picture. She doesn't look nearly as old as she does.
But that
as,
movie's
as
fucking 30 years old now. So I mean,
yeah, that's
you know.
True. That's right.
But didn't you just love the woman that the new Don's new secretary the that he marries? I mean, that he gets
oh yeah
to?
Yeah.
I just love that character. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to reach through the TV and hug her for being so. Perfect. Like I love the way they showed like and Don the John Hamm is a brilliant actor. I mean, he is
yeah, yes.
What he can do with his face. I mean, and granted the writers had a very short period of time to do this, to cram this relationship in. But the way that John Hamm was able to express it on his face, the sort of awe and the shock of it, especially there's a scene where they're in California and they go to a restaurant and it looks like the restaurant from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it does.
With the wall, with the rock wall. And one of the kids spills her milk and the way she deals with it, the way, you know, mm-hmm. that doesn't fucking snap her head off like Mrs. Draper would,
yeah.
Like Betsy would. And just the what happens in his face, it's just brilliant. Just an absolutely, you're right, a perfect season of television.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're jiving just the way I did with that, especially that last episode. I know a lot of people were like, "Oh, fucking Don Draper and marrying this woman."
It was perfect.
Like, thank you.
It was absolutely what a guy like him would have done.
Yeah,
especially given this blow where he was so completely off his game when you know he may have been investigated and forcing that account out. I mean, it was heartbreaking, especially, and I felt bad for what's his face, for the young kid whose name I never remember, that he had to lose that account because it just, you know, wasn't his fault. But just a great, I downloaded it from iTunes and watched it straight through. It was just wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the seasons that, you know, I like to get my favorite shows on DVD as to sort of have them like, yeah. A series of bound novels, West Wing and Deadwood and all this shit. And that's what I got to do with Mad Men still. But I'm going to start with season 3 or 4. I'm going to start from this most recent season and work backwards.
Yep.
Oh, my God. You know, we're getting near to the point where we're going to end up doing 2-hour shows because we just did an hour
and a half.
Yeah,
might as well. It's a big one.
I don't think anyone's going to argue with us. But, we didn't get to a few things, but we'll try to, we'll try to get to them next week. The problem was, I want to talk about the incoming Congress, and I just had these statistics about the incoming Republican Congress that I wanted to get to, and they're being inaugurated next week. Like, our next show, they'll be inaugurated during that show, I believe.
Oh, Jesus.
We're going to talk about that. But, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in.
Yes.
You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. Drive safely, and we'll see you next Thursday.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.